This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That is Jackson Browne's song from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. She's Got to Be Somebody's Baby, which is a perfect theme song for our next story. It is about baby Veronica, a girl who is now 3 years old but is caught in a battle between her biological parents and her adoptive parents. The thing that makes this more interesting than other battles over adoptive versus biological is that the biological father in this case, Dustin Browne, is a member of the Cherokee Nation and has been using Native American law and laws at the federal level about Native Americans to try to keep custody of baby Veronica, while Matt and Melanie Capobianco, the South Carolina couple who had raised her until she was 2 years old, said, "We want the girl back. She's our daughter." And they took the case to the Supreme Court. But the case is far from over. On Friday, there were hearings in a mediation agreement hearing between the two families in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Here to explain all of this and help me analyze what may happen next is Jason Ahmet, who is an expert on tribal law and an assistant dean at the University of Tulsa's Law School. Jason, welcome to America Weekend.
Good morning, Paul.
First, before we talk about where things stand now, back me up to the beginning. How did this become such a mess in the first place?
Well, there's some facts that aren't entirely clear. It appears, however, that the adoption agency did not properly identify Dustin Browne back in 2009. And when they didn't identify him properly to the tribe, then the tribe couldn't determine whether or not he was a member, and so there was a factual problem right from the very beginning.
But it's the girl's biological mother who gave the child up. Were she and Dustin Browne married at the time?
No, they were not.
Does she have the right to give her child up for adoption without his approval in Oklahoma?
No, she doesn't. And that's an issue as well. There's some facts indicating that a process server was sent to Mr. Browne's residence asking him to give up essentially temporary custody of the child. He was in the armed forces and was going over to Iraq. And when he left, he, if I understand the facts correctly from having read them, he didn't understand that he was signing away his parental rights when he was given those documents. And after he figured it out, he tried to reverse that.
All right. I mentioned in the introduction of this that this case is different from other battles over adopted children because it has to do with laws specific to Native Americans, in particular, something called the Indian Child Welfare Act. What is that and how does it apply?
Paul, the Indian Child Welfare Act is a federal statute that was passed in 1978 for some very good reasons. In 1978, one in four of every Indian children in the United States was being adopted away from their Indian homes. And there were some really bad reasons for that. Unfortunately, Indian folks, not always, but in large measure, tend not to be as wealthy. And those folks that are looking to adopt tend usually to be more wealthy. And what we were seeing was that the Indian tribes were being decimated because their children were being adopted out of the culture. It turns out that this practice of adopting children out of the Indian culture is a process that's used to destroy indigenous cultures. The UN Declaration on Indigenous Peoples' Rights that was passed in 2007, it contains really important provisions that require laws like the Indian Child Welfare Act to be passed not just in the United States, but all throughout the world, so that Indian cultures, indigenous cultures, continue to thrive. They're a part of the fabric of our society.
Now, this is not something that would force an Indian couple to keep a child if both the biological mother and father agreed to put it up for adoption, right?
That's exactly right. What it does, fundamentally, and applicable to the case right now, is it gives the Indian tribe the control, its courts, the control to determine whether or not the adoption should go forward. And I'd point out that most of the times when Indian tribes are asked to make these adoption decisions, they tend to go along with what everyone wants. And there are many instances where Indian tribes have approved adoptions to non-Indian couples.
Okay, I mentioned that the Capabiancos, this couple in South Carolina, they raised baby Veronica until she was 2 years old, at which point she was returned to Darren Brown. Was that under the Indian Child Welfare Act? A court ruled that that had to happen?
In part. The South Carolina Supreme Court made what's called a best interest determination, which is something that has to be done in every adoption proceeding. There has to be an evidentiary proceeding, and then after that, the court has to decide what's in the best interest of the child. So in South Carolina, the court there kind of mixed up the question of tribal jurisdiction and other kinds of tribal preferences. Actually, jurisdiction wasn't a question. I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. The tribal preferences under Sections 14 and 15 of the Indian Child Welfare Act and the best interest determination. And when the matter went up to the Supreme Court said, no, you know, South Carolina, you really shouldn't have mixed those two issues together. You should just make a best interest determination. Which, by the way, Paul, ever since then, there still has not yet been a hearing to take evidence on a best interest determination.
Okay, what happened after that? And how did it end up at the Supreme Court?
Well, so the adoptive couple challenged the South Carolina court's decision. It took the matter up to the Supreme Court. It's very unusual for the Supreme Court to take a case directly from a state Supreme Court, but it did in this case. It got remanded back to the court that it came from, which is the usual course of events. I've read some reporting where folks have said that the U.S. Supreme Court determined that the South Carolina court should have jurisdiction over the matter. That it's not accurate. What happened was is that the U.S. Supreme Court just remanded the case to where it came from, which is what it always does. In any event, it remanded it back to South Carolina, and without a hearing, then the South Carolina courts finalized the adoption.
Okay, so this kid is caught up in the midst of all of this. Do we have any idea what kind of impact this is having on her? Raised by one couple until she's two, given back to her biological dad until she was three. Now there are still legal battles being going on that she, of course, at 3 years old, has no understanding of. Why isn't somebody having a discussion about what is best for the child?
Exactly, Paul. You're exactly right. You know, somebody asked me the other day, why is this an important case? And I responded, this is an important case because it involves a child. Every case that involves a child is important. And so that's exactly what needs to happen. And I think there's some hope. You know, the case is before the tribal court, where it should be right now, when you read the jurisdictional provisions of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Now, that doesn't determine what the outcome is going to be. It just says that the tribal court should be making a determination. And the tribal court and the local courts in Oklahoma have done the right thing. They've asked the parties to all sit down and start talking to each other. And it's my hope that they do that and that they involve a qualified mental health professional in that discussion so that folks can address that very important issue that you raised, which is what is in this child's best interest? How is this impacting this child?
And that's what was supposed to be taking place on Friday at this so-called mediation hearing?
Well, you know, it wasn't really a mediation hearing. What happened in Oklahoma was on Friday morning, or actually I think on Thursday, there was notice given to the adoptive couple that there would be another hearing before the tribal court on the guardianship. But while all of these things were happening in the Supreme Court, Dustin Brown got called off, as I understand it, to go back into the military for his training for National Guard. And so no one would be able to look after his child, knowing that this was an important issue. As I understand it, he got guardianship given to his parents. So the Cherokee court was to address that guardianship provision. And when they did that, it wasn't to be forever. And so the court had scheduled a hearing for this last Friday at 11 a.m. Coco Bianas were informed of that. And then, for whatever reason, they filed a different proceeding in Oklahoma State Court, which is called a habeas corpus petition. The court there, then held court earlier, I believe starting at 8 a.m. in the morning. Ultimately, after you kind of cracked through all of the procedure,
nothing,
what happened was is the parties agreed to mediate.
They agreed to continue talking and try to figure out a resolution to this, and meanwhile, you've got a little girl being treated as a ping pong ball. Jason, thanks for your for analysis and joining me here today on America Weekend. America.